as much to nearly as many people and so on, you know.
But they were still leading because they're the only company, and I went to go look at this, who support LDAC and APX, APTX, HD on the same freaking device, plus support for iris audio and MQA files.
Yeah.
So even on
and the same with video. The same with video. They did like do really good support for video files. Yeah. Okay.
Wired and wireless. It is LG premium devices are the best option.
Best value. Yeah.
For audio, and that's a great way to start episode 120.
Weeping in the background. Sound of weeping.
I'm Lindsay Shooters, Sharpshooters on social media, that opinion guy on the internet, and I'm joined as always by the editor and LG fanboy, editor of Tech Magazine, the continent's largest consumer technology publication, Gavin Dudley. Gavin, you are wailing, the gnashing of teeth. LG is gone. We covered it a little bit last week when it was still a rumor. This week it is confirmed. They are winding down their operations. July is the last, is the end of the mobile division. But this morning, yesterday evening in US time, they did announce that G8, Velvet, V50, and V60 will receive 3 years of software support and Android updates up to Android version 12 or 13. which is amazing, actually.
Okay, so all those funny noises you've been hearing from me is me weeping and moaning in the background. We've made no secret of our LG love on the show. And I mean, I've been in love with LG for like way long. And they've been the most extraordinary partner for me, I have to say. It sounds like a whole eulogy, but I suppose it sort of is. They really have been the phone that ticked all my boxes and scratched me in the right spot. They did everything for me every year. They were seldom the very first to market with everything, but they were always really good with the innovations and stuff they did bring to market, a lot of which was experimental, and I suppose they paid the price for that. They, you know, they tried to break out of the mold. They were the first to introduce wide-angle cameras. Then they introduced add-on modules. Then they introduced all sorts of things along the way. Technologically, they were sound. The pricing was excellent. The build quality was superb. You know, all these reasons that I loved LG, and that was the end of them. And I still haven't in my own mind satisfied myself for why they went under. But the writing was on the wall years ago. They haven't been profitable for quite a few years. And again, it's obvious that you can't play a high-end game with 1 or 2% of the market. You know, the R&D will just kill you. Just the, you know, the kind of money, the way the money moves around, you need more than 1 or 2% of the market actually to continue to innovate in your products. So, I mean, I'm really hell of a cut up about it, I can't deny, which I don't feel for any other brands. I suppose the only other people who feel like that are Mac people and Apple people who get really caught up in, you know, the sentiments behind their brand. Well, I was an LG fanboy. Okay, that's the title of my forthcoming biography. I was an LG fanboy. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but the truth is the writing was on the wall for some time with poor old LG, and now it's passed on. However, yeah. I mean, we've still got, you know, almost a dozen phone brands to choose from in the market, so, you know, we shouldn't be moaning.
I'm still looking for a V60. I'm going to pick it up because...
Me too, man. If I can get a fire sale V60, if I could get my hands on that, not only because it will have been kind of the last of an era for LG, but it was such a fantastic phone. It could have been my phone of the year for last year, man. Damn. The V60. I'm now hunting down one. You make a good point. Good idea.
I'm also looking for a standard version, like the original, the first version of the G8, not the S or the X, the international version of the G8. Because I made a great case for LG and delivered a eulogy. It just pressed publish minutes before we started recording this on thatopinionguy.co.za. So you can go over there to see all my thoughts about it, taking you all the way back to 2017 when the writing was first etched on the wall for LG, where they got kneecapped by Samsung. And then since then, they've course corrected, been up with the times with regards to hardware performance and quality, outperforming their competitors in some areas.
Absolutely.
But just the marketing hype wasn't there. The media had made its decision that Samsung was the one running Apple closest. And I fall foul of this as well. I believe the iPhone is the best general mobile computing user experience. So at its price point, I can only recommend other devices, either for niche use cases or for general purpose, if it surpasses the iPhone experience. And I'm sorry, but Android devices rarely ever do that.
We don't want to talk about Apple products now, Lindsay. Thank you very much.
I'm saying,
this is the middle of our LG eulogy, and you're already talking about someone else at the funeral. Thanks, man.
I'm owning up. I'm taking responsibility for my role in the demise of LG as well by making it a binary conversation in a very nuanced mobile computing landscape.
Right.
But you can read all of that. The other big story, Gavin, is that Vodacom is cutting its data prices by a further 15 cents, which then represents a 43% reduction from the same time 2 years ago, where a gig of data used to cost you $150. It now costs you 43% less.
Okay, yeah. But really, you want to pay maximum 50 to 60 Rand for a gigabyte of data. That's pretty much possible everywhere except apparently Vodacom. Is that right? I mean, so your gig of data just continues to cost more on Vodacom no matter what. Is that right?
Now 85 cents.
Now
85 cents, if I'm not mistaken.
So 85 Rand for a gig.
Yes, 85 Rand. Sorry. Yes.
Okay, where everybody else is charging between 50 and 60 and some considerably less. Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, I mean, I don't know how they get away with this all the time. I think because the kind of detailed information we're talking about now doesn't maybe reach the masses. Mm. You know, the fact that Vodacom is the most expensive network, significantly always has been and continues to do that no matter what anybody says, because they can get away with it because people continue to pay them that money for those products. So, you know, looking at you, Mr. Shooters.
Obviously, in 2020, the Competition Commission gave that damning report on the cost of data in South Africa, and the mobile network providers have been reducing the cost of data since then. I don't know how this affects the rest of their bundle offering. I don't know when it kicks in, but Vodacom decided to do this, which is, it's good for consumers. That's why we need to call it out. Other big story, Facebook.
Point out, I think it was it last week or the week before where we discussed the in-depth telecommunication services report thing, where MTN topped most of the standings and Vodacom was very middling and in some cases quite low, both on network quality, on customer service, and on price. These are the three metrics. And Vodacom was second last. Worse only was Rain. Everybody else was better than Vodacom, including Telkom, Cell C, and MTN. Mm. And Rain was significantly worse just because they have huge customer service problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea that Vodacom might be the best network at anything was debunked by this report, as far as I'm concerned. So don't believe the marketing. Check the facts. Okay.
It's the best network to get high-speed mobile data LTE to my house.
That's your house. Okay, fine.
That is my truth, Gavin.
Niche case of one. Yeah. Yeah, sure. No, but I mean, a lot of people might experience that.
Dev and Rain.
Yeah, Vodacom and Rain. Choose from the devil you do know and the devil you don't know, but they're both the devil.
In either way, I'm in hell.
Yeah. Good one. That's a good one. Either way, you're in hell.
Talking about hell by another name, Facebook suffered another data breach. Please go on to haveibeenpwned.com and check your email address to see if you were part of that. It was like crazy numbers, like 700 million freaking email addresses and usernames have been exposed. I've had a couple of family members who I've been receiving very strange messages from over the last couple of days. All have been part of it. Luckily, mine, bizarrely, hasn't been a part of that, but I have been a part of 11 other data breaches.
Yeah. as have I. And this is the thing. I mean, there's new and different ways to be alerted to these breaches now. So one of the things that happens quite a lot is, to me, and I've never known how to react, is that your browser tells you, you know, if you visit some site, let's say you visit the Netflix site, and it will tell you your password may have been compromised. They don't mean that Netflix is has compromised your password. They mean that one of your accounts somewhere on the internet has been compromised, and it might lead to compromising of other accounts. I'm not sure what they mean, but I get these alarming messages, and I at least have a way to filter them out and figure out what's critical and what's not. But I think most people, when they get messages like, you may have been a victim of a breach thing, they kind of go into panic mode and start frantically changing all their passwords. I'm never really sure what course of action to take. And I'm like a veteran of this stuff. I'm never sure if I must go and change all my passwords, some of my passwords, you know, where can I find out which accounts have actually been compromised? You know, this kind of thing. It's not easy to navigate that ground. And most people are in a panic when they're trying to do it as well. So their brain shuts down. What do you do, Lindsay, if you get a notice that, you know, you log on to Amazon.com and it says your account may have been compromised? Now, what do you do now?
I go to haveibeenpwned.com. Okay. I'll link it in the podcast description, right, and go check. And then it will tell you, like, on this day, this data breach happened and your email address was part of that and whatever. And then I go and see if I still use that service. I try and register from that service. I change the password if it's the same password as I use. I know it's terrible, but I have certain, like, sets of passwords.
I'm exactly the same. I've got two or three different sets of passwords. You're in the hope that will confuse would-be attackers.
So they all like super secure. They like 13 characters long.
Same size. Yeah.
Like very hard to decipher vocabulary and randomized characters and all that stuff. So I try and make my passwords as strong as possible. So here's the thing. I would say you should save all of your passwords to whatever service, like Google as a password manager, or Apple's Keychain. They all now building in services where they suggest passwords to use. Mm-hmm. And then because you are on that ecosystem and that's like where your life is, you can just save it and you won't have to ever enter or remember a password again. But because I jump between different ecosystems I cannot do that.
Yes, and same problem.
I don't believe in password managers in terms of like 1Password or LastPass or those guys, because those guys also get hacked. And it's like,
well, not much.
I'm rather going to trust the vendor of the service that I am using, like Google.
Like Facebook, Apple. Right. No, you not trust Facebook. The vendor like Facebook and get hacked.
No, not Facebook.
Not Facebook. Okay. I would actually trust the password managers. For those who don't know how this works, a password manager can either store all your passwords in a single repository. Almost said suppository, something I've done before. Store all your passwords in a single repository, and then you have a master password that unlocks that repository. But it will fill your passwords in for you automatically on the web and on your phone, and it can make up exceptionally hard passwords for you because you don't have to remember them. Only the password manager has to remember them. So that really helps a lot. For some reason, I haven't got around to using it yet. I'm afraid because I have so many accounts on the internet, each one of them will have to be sort of programmed into the system. So, but for all the people who might be listening to us in a car or while they're away from their PC, I would like to spell out, have I been pwned? So that is, have I been, and then the word pwned, which is internet vernacular for have I been breached. P-W-N-E-D. P-W-N-E-D spells pwned. So have I been P-W-N-E-D is the website to visit that will tell you if you've been caught out anywhere. All right, just for those who can't check the show notes right now. So what is the fallout from the Facebook data breach in the end? Probably nothing. As usual, no one really gets done in, you know. It's just a hoo-ha for like 2 days and then it goes away.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to face any consequences because of this. So here's the other question. Here's the other discussion, right? So quantum computing. Everyone always asks about quantum, or like whoever's trying to sell quantum computing will always like talk a big game, and you may have heard of it before. But I will tell you this now. The bugle for quantum computing's existence will be when every encryption security system we have online right now becomes obsolete overnight. Because when quantum computing comes, they can process those encryption keys in seconds.
So quantum computing is like a, it's literally what it sounds like. You know, we had RISC computing, we had parallel computing, all different ways to make supercomputers go really fast. Quantum computing uses almost a kind of arcane technology and is so powerful that it can break the hardest software encrypted password security levels and so on. So this is what Lindsay is saying, is that when quantum computing arrives, which could be in the next few years, then the whole concept of passwords will be completely nebulous, because anything can be cracked by this machine.
Data encryption is, I think, where were we now? We're like at 32-bit. I think we surpassed 24-bit. And like quantum is just
orders of magnitude. Billions of options in minutes.
Sorry for setting off your anxiety around
digital. It's true. I mean, have we thought beyond that? I suppose biometrics, I think, just resolves into a data string of some kind, I think.
That's all encrypted data, which is...
which can be cracked. Okay.
As long as they can replicate that pattern, or at least get the code that...
That's the thing. I think
some game.
But you see, this is why I gave up on security early. I saw that there was just no way, man. There was just no way I was going to be able to protect myself on all fronts all the time. You know, it just became chaos. So I gave up on security. I'm kind of trying to live my digital life as far in the open as possible. And what's key to that is making sure that you never earn too much money, because then you become a target. I've decided I want to earn too little money all the time so that I live in debt. And in that way, there will be no point to hacking my account. All you're really gaining access to is all my debt. So may I recommend that you all dispose of any, you know, any material goods you have, any investments, and plunge yourself into poverty, and thereby making yourself a far smaller attack target for hackers. This has been a strategy that has worked brilliantly for me. No one has cracked my accounts to absorb any of my debt yet. But we'll see.
What else you got? That went sideways quite quickly. Darren, you have a headline here. We were supposed to cover it last week, but we kind of ran out of time. What the F is going on with government?
I mean, it's not a big story yet, but you need to keep an eye on it. Because, you know, if we're gonna watchdog our government, which apparently we need to do, apparently we need to kind of watchdog our own government. Everyone does, but ours in particular, we're all aware of issues that have happened. So within one day of each other, we get these two press releases, MTN announcing that it has the government contract to provide cellular services. It's very excited about it. The next day, Vodacom, we have won the contract to supply government services. So, you know, both MTN and Vodacom both think they've won the contract. The contract goes, but the goes under the bizarre name RT152021. Who the hell knows what that means? And it's called a transversal contract, which I think means it covers multiple departments with multiple cellular services. I guess that's what it means. But, you know, the fact that both of them claim to have won the contract, I think, means that they've each won a portion of the contract. And if government was smart, that's what they would do. They would play them off against each other to get the best deal. So, I mean, that's all there is to it, really, is the fact that both the two biggest network operators both claim to have won government business. But I mean, that in itself is not that intriguing. It's just that they both claim to have won the same thing. Okay.
That's what I got for you there. I feel that. And then you have a bit of a KPMG CEO Outlook Pulse survey.
Yeah, this was kind of intriguing. This affects me a lot more than you. It looks like CEOs are pulling back on the whole let's send everybody to work from home. It turns out that most of them haven't actually downsized their operation or their premise, their physical premises through the COVID thing. They actually want all their people to come back to the office, despite what we all think about what great gains have been made in people working from home. It turns out most CEOs don't see it that way. Only 17% of them are actually planning to downsize the office space. And that's down from 2/3 of them who thought that in August last year. So between August last year and now, the percentage of CEOs who are going to downsize their operation has shrunk from like 2/3 to like less than 1/4. So, you know, that's a big jump. I mean, this is disturbing for me because I'm quite keen on the work from home thing for various reasons. But on the whole, I think CEOs think that once the virus gets this, once the vaccine gets distributed more broadly, it might be safe to go back to the office. I mean, our own work situation has not really borne that out. Every week or two or three, somebody comes down with COVID at our office, where only a few people are working right now. And every time that happens, they have to deep clean the entire office. I mean, I really, you know, don't understand why you would so desperately want people back at your office when you have to take all these extreme measures. Okay, but I mean, that's how CEOs feel about it. Who knows the mind of a CEO? I just know that I don't have a CEO mindset, never have had. But the bottom line is they appear to be dead keen to have everybody come back to the office. That's what the KPMG survey is showing.
Okay. Yeah, okay. It's the thing that is the failure of the media now, besides the way that it failed LG.
Yeah, quite right.
Is this constant insistence that the vaccine is the magic bullet for all of our woes. And then obviously it's never going to be fast enough. Whatever rollout is never going
to be fast.
Overnight, everybody gets vaccinated. And yeah, I just see the world returning to type or reverting to type. The practices of the before times, learning absolutely nothing from how this virus has devastated our very, ripped through the fiber of our society.
It really has. When people say everything has changed, I mean, it's hard to pin people on exactly what they mean, but actually it's lots of little changes that all add up to quite significant changes is what I found. Well, you know, probably at a tech level, the key issue has been work from home. At the tech level, that's been the key issue. How to maintain productivity without office infrastructure? How good is your broadband? You know, do you need server level access? You know, all these kind of things. These have been technical issues that people have dealt with. And I think most people have bared up quite well under that. But it's easy for me to say I've got like a huge monitor and, you know, fiber broadband and this and that and the next thing. Maybe not everyone fared as well as I did, and maybe some people would be keen to go back to the office. I don't know.
I know a lot of those situations. As I've said before, I've been watching, obviously monitoring my kids, doing the online classes and stuff, and just counting how many of their classmates aren't on the calls. Quite obviously doing those calls when they are on it in very challenging situations, obviously from smartphones, it's been an eye opener to the very digital circumstances we face across these borders.
Here's the interesting thing about the school thing. You know, there are kids attending school with your kids. I'm speaking now generally, not specifically you, Lindsay. And you actually don't know the socioeconomic background of half the classmates, you know, your kids are dealing with in class. Everybody's, you know, trying to appear to be on equal platform in school, but actually the background to that can be wildly unequal, actually. All right. But enough of us bemoaning the problems of the country.
I apologize for the dogs barking. There is a stop and go right outside my house.
Okay.
Because of infrastructure work. And whenever a car pulls up, the dogs obviously think it's a stranger. And then go barking at it. So that's just one of those things.
It's one of those work from home issues. But we have like lots of dogs and they go off all the time as well, and we've just stopped apologizing for it. You know, it's a very minor inconvenience to most people, really.
It does affect the stream though, because it affects it's like it's data traveling across the line, and especially
I see.
So then it breaks down on your side.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
I'm always like hovering. Here's my tech tip for the week. When you are on a video call, always have your mouse cursor on the mute switch. I know Gavin, the space bar works in certain things. You've told us before.
Yes.
To quickly mute yourself. But yeah, just in case of other sounds, because it might be a mild irritation in your mind, but especially if it's like in a bigger group meeting, it does affect the audio stream from the other person, because it's all like bits having
that's
to go.
That's a very good point. So the dog barking basically happens at a frequency that's not really the same as the human voice. And so the computer has to work so much harder to on that audio. Also, because some of it is distant. So the computer is having to work harder to process the dog audio, which messes up your stream, your outgoing stream. Yeah.
Yeah. So always be on mute when you are not speaking. Gavin, talking about sound coming into your ears and products, people aren't really using that much now that they're working from home. The LG Tone Free Buds, your initial reaction when you first unboxed them and put them in your ears was that they were terrible.
Yeah,
you've I'm afraid so.
Yes, well, this is the weird thing. I mean, it's very weird for me when I analyze what products get traction with me and what don't. Because, without sounding weird, I have a choice of over a dozen pairs of earbuds at this point. And why did I end up with the LG Tone Free Buds, which were a pair of buds that I panned when I took them out the box? My expectations for these LG earbuds were very high, of course, as usual, as they are with LG products. And these sounded truly terrible. About 2 weeks later, they got a software update and started sounding like normal earphones at that point, still lacking a lot of bass. But what I discovered was that I actually end up listening to a lot more talk and radio and stuff like that and audiobooks and a lot less music on my earbuds. That's kind of weird, right? I listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of talk shows, a lot of radio streams, and a lot of audiobooks, and not so much music. And for these other things, the buds sound great. They don't sound bad on music, but they're really weak on bass. But I discovered that there were all these other things that contribute to one's headphone experience. The container that the earbuds come in, how easy it is to get the buds in and out of the container. These things ended up mattering a lot more to me because, I'm driving, I might put them in the car for bizarre reason, or I might be handling one thing and need to put these in my ears, and I found that the LGs were excellent in that regard. The box they come in, or the dock they come in, is shaped again like a small hockey puck, but very nicely contoured. And so that slips really easily in and out of pockets, better than all the other containers I've had. And there's a magnetic thing. They lie flat, so they don't go down like a well the way they do on the AirPods and other things like that. These actually lie flat in the top of the box, so they're really easy to get out. There's a magnet that pulls them in, and they've got UV germ killer inside there. I don't know if you guys are familiar with how UV works, but UV breaks down the DNA of bacteria, and these have got a UV light that goes on inside the box when you put the buds in, and that then routinely kills the bacteria on your buds. Not that that's a big deal for me. It's just for people who are germophobes that might be an issue. The LG app is really cool as well, which actually allows you to set quite a detailed EQ. For those who don't know, EQ is like micro adjusting the tone using waveforms. And this has got a really good EQ, and it's got a level of noise cancellation that allows you to hear through, where you can allow ambient sounds to come into your ears.
So not emotional intelligence, Gavin.
No. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'm definitely emotionally intelligently challenged. So these are probably helping me by filtering out, other people's comments. I feel much better about myself.
I unfollowed Professor Tim Noakes on Twitter the other day because I just couldn't deal with like the negativity and the ignorance that gets spewed about like the pandemic data.
You mean not by him, but by his other followers?
Yeah, but he retweets it, so it's all like panda content. So like, the pandas, the pandas.
Yes, those research people. Yeah. They're very lightweight. Yeah.
No, they're not lightweight. They're just wrong. They are just wrong.
But it's really not like him to retweet unsubstantiated data.
Dude,
because he's been in so much trouble over this stuff in the past. I'm surprised he's still doing that.
I respect Professor Tim Noakes for his body of work in mm-hmm. physical education.
Sciences. Yeah,
sciences. And all of that stuff, the banting stuff and the waterlogged stuff, that is incredible work.
Right.
But when it comes to things about the pandemic and conspiracy theories, there's a lot of QAnon stuff that also comes out there.
Really, with Noakes?
Yeah, with his circle, and he retweets.
That's interesting.
I used to think, before I unfollowed him, I believed that by just having a little people into that world, I can more balance my own opinions.
Yes, yes, I agree with you. Yeah.
Taking in the other research, because he does retweet like really factual looking things, so it would be like alternate journals or stuff like that. And the community has around him.
So it looks pseudo scientifically correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I found that it was impacting negatively on my personal well-being because I'd be getting upset that these things still exist. These misconceptions and misinformation is still out there. And yeah, unfollowing it just kind of added a bit more positivity to my life, or at least reduced
positivity. Interesting. So, for the listeners who don't know, I mean, Lindsay and I, other than tech, we have our hobbies. Lindsay's quite interested in physical sciences, well, all sciences, but physical sciences, fitness, training, those kind of things. So, you know, he follows those kind of things. I'm obsessed with economics generally. And I have my own version of this with a company called the Free Market Foundation, who on the surface appear to be lobbying for really interesting changes in the economic system in South Africa. When you scratch below the surface, it's all very QAnon as well, man, and also a bit problematic. So it's kind of weird where on the surface, you're like, yeah, you find yourself nodding, and then you look a little further and you're like, no, I don't think so. So I'm having a lot of that level of experience with the Free Market Foundation. But I also believe I must go on listening to them because it's important to know how other people are thinking. Yeah,
I'm escaping those echo chambers because they are just negative for me. Plus, I get them on what do you call it now? Clubhouse now. So
right.
There's a lot of that.
Damn, man. I still haven't got my Clubhouse act together. I'm desperate to get my Clubhouse act together.
Listen to them. And just to give tips to other users, because you've used a lot more, a wider variety of buds than I have, especially low-cost buds, away from the premium sort of stuff. So the AirPods are the benchmark in terms of functionality within the Apple ecosystem. Just ease of use. Battery life is kind of there. When it comes to battery life and sound quality, I would say that Samsung pretty much has it waxed with
we both like Samsung as the middle road.
They set like the 6 hours on a charge kind of benchmark, which everybody else must now live up to.
So which are Samsung's most expensive buds right now?
It's the Galaxy Buds Pro.
Right. And those must be close to 4G. $4,000?
I don't have the prices right now, but I'm more focusing on your knowledge of the lower cost one. So what is out there like sub R1,000? I know there's a whole bunch of stuff.
What
are we looking out for, and how do we make purchasing decisions there?
Okay, well, probably the single thing that a lot of people are overlooking is that the container that the buds come in is critical to how you're going to use that product going forward. Because the only way to charge the buds is in the container. So if the container breaks, the buds are useless, basically. So the container needs to be more sturdy than you think. But also your willingness to carry them around means the container must be a size and shape that you're willing to carry around in like a jeans pocket. So, you know, they all seem small and portable at first. And then you discover that some containers do actually just work better than other containers. So take a good look at the container. Make sure it's a shape and size you think you can live with. and make sure it's fairly sturdy, because if it breaks, you can throw the entire pair of headphones away. They're completely dependent on that container to go on working. So that's quite key to me. And then the other thing is, do you want the ones that bury inside the ear, or do you want the ones with a stalk that you can use to pull them in and out of the ear? That's the thing that affected me most. At first, I didn't really like the stalks. The stalks are what you get with the earpods, the AirPods, my mistake. They, you know, they have little stalks that hang out because they look so conspicuous. It, when they're embedded or nested or seated inside the ear, they don't look nearly so dorky. But what I found was that I end up pulling mine out of my ears all the time to speak to people or to do things or to hear things in my environment. So the stalk provides a convenient way to pull them in and out of my ears. So there is that. The thing that still bugs me the most about in-ear headphones is the touch sensors and the unreliability of the tap sensors when you're tapping to advance the tracks or to pause or to play. How inaccurate some of them are drives me absolutely crazy. Because when you want to pause the thing, you want to pause the thing. It must stop at that point. You mustn't be tapping and tapping and, you know, trying to get it to work. It's very frustrating. So the Jabra earbuds have been the most effective at this because they don't use a touch sensor. They actually have a physical press button. So you press and it actually clicks and turns the music on.
But aren't you just pressing the thing further into your ear?
Yeah, but if you weight that switch carefully, you don't have to press too hard, but there's still a physical press there. So below R1,000, One More is one of our favorite headphone brands in general. They produce a pair called the Piston Buds, which is their kind of cheaper offering. Still sounds fantastic, and they're quite nice and hard wearing. They below R1,000, but our winner has been the Edifier X3, I think they're called. Edifier is a little known brand in South Africa. They deserve a lot more prominence. They have fantastic products at great prices. So you can look up Edifier, you can purchase these online. They've got a whole range of buds, but the entry-level buds are called the X, and the X3 are the pair I tested, and they won out as the best budget buds I could find with the Edifier X3. You're going to struggle to find them, but you can buy them online.
Microphone quality on those?
I don't really test microphone quality much because there's so many variables that go into the input, you know, the mic. Sorry, what do I mean? I mean the input quality of the voice, because by the time you've recorded it, you know, it's been processed several times by the thing you recorded it on, by other things. So it's hard to know what part of the quality the buds are responsible for and what part the application is responsible for. But they've all been reasonable. None of them are great. They're all just all pretty good on voice. Samsung has made the most progress, I think, on voice responsiveness on their buds.
One thing I will say, just to add to this conversation, and to add on to my previous tip, is that using Bluetooth headphones on video calls is not the greatest thing, because there's compression that happens on the Bluetooth stream. So between your buds and the device, there's compression. Now you're also looking at how far the mic is away from your face. So there's that quality, the degradation that you have to account for. And then all of those compressions, so like the noise compression on the headphones themselves, the Bluetooth compression that further presses down those bits into a smaller package. And then it must communicate over the internet, which is going to compress it further down within the application that you're using. So like the audio quality, like I know, especially on Clubhouse or on other audio media, as audio is starting to become a lot more prevalent in our media, you can hear when someone is talking on Bluetooth earphones. And then like the quality of the codec that the devices are using
is key.
Scalable codec is really good. And Apple also has their own proprietary codec between the AirPods, so those are pretty good. But outside of that, it's a minefield.
You're right. I mean, the way I've been testing voice is tricky, because when you make a voice call to someone or a WhatsApp call, a lot of things affect the quality of that call. Could be the network quality, other things. So I tend to not test the earbuds in that situation, because you don't really, you can't ask somebody else, how do I sound? Yeah. Too many things are affecting the quality. What I do is I record a voice note a WhatsApp voice note and I send it, say, to my wife or to you or someone, and just tell them to ignore it. But at least I can play that voice note back and hear what it sounded like when it was getting compressed on my side. I can hear what the finished product sounded like before it got sent off to you. So that's one way to test them. If you're looking to test your headphones, record a voice note on WhatsApp and then listen to it.
And while you are there and doing those things, please do tell your friends on that voice note that they should listen to the Overclocked ZA podcast. And that is my story for the week. I'm Sharpshooters on social media. I will link that opinionguy.co.za down in the podcast description. It is linked there, so you can go read my eulogy for LG. I got videos coming up on the Instax 1S or the Square, the SQ1. That is dropping this week. Just talking
that's the Instamatic camera that prints out its pictures. Yeah.
Just talking about how why those products exist and how it can improve your photography, or at least how it improved my photography. So that's coming up on YouTube. It's probably dropping that video tomorrow, which would be Friday. Gavin, what's going on with you?
Let's see what's going on, right? I've been through my TV super test. I have a very impressive large Samsung QLED coming my way, which is great. That'll round out my TV super test. I mean, it was so weird. I tried to do budget TVs and people kept sending me like over the top expensive TVs, which doesn't really suit my agenda, but okay, there it is. I've been having a lot of fun actually testing TVs because my own TVs are now so old that you can actually see the quality difference. It's like VHS and DVD, you know. I've been testing a couple new phones. I've got the Huawei Mate 40 Pro at the moment, which is all very interesting. As you know, I've been an advocate for Huawei becoming the third smartphone platform. We'll see how my experience with the Mate 40 works out. I'm keen to hear your notes as well when we swap products later on, maybe next week. I'd like to hear what Lindsay has to say about the Mate 40 because he's much more astute with his photographic testing than I am. So that's where I'm at the moment. Done with the TVs, got some new phones, got a whole barrage of laptops to work my way through from Dell and Acer and Asus. I'll get around to it. You can't see the situation. I'm walled in by cardboard boxes in my office here, and I'm annoying my family. But that's my whole story. I'll be diving into laptops as I finish the story on TVs. Cool. That's my story.
Awesome.